Thanks, Mark. All right, very good. Well, as Mark said, the impetus for this came out of Dr. Kendeth and appreciate his leadership in this committee for many, many years in the Genetic Prediction Committee. And one of the things that he asked me last year to come to this committee, some of you that were here, and sort of give a summary of the overall state of carcass traits in the various genetic evaluations as we look across the different breeds and dig into the different approaches that they might be taking and to kind of give a report on where things stood. And as I went through that last year, there's generally three approaches that various breed organizations take to their reporting of genetic values for carcass traits. Some organizations collect both carcass and ultrasound data and report those individually rather than combine those. And so they would have, in some cases, two sets of EPDs on animals, one reflecting the ultrasound data that's submitted and a separate number that reflects their genetic merit for carcass traits calculated from abattoir or harvest data. Other organizations combine those into one set of predictions where they take the carcass and the ultrasound data, combine them into one. Under the surface, there are two sets of EPDs produced. Those are treated as correlated traits, just in many ways the same way as we treat weaning and yearling weight as correlated traits, where many of the genes that influence one also influence the other. But if the organizations that do that, a majority of them use those models to combine both carcass and ultrasound data as it's submitted, and both sets of data influence both sets of EPDs, but the ones that are presented to producers for use in selection would be the ones on the carcass scale. So their marbling EPDs would be in units of marbling score, for example, and the carcass records give more emphasis, or give a little more emphasis because they're the trait of economic interest. A couple of organizations use a very similar model but print results on the ultrasound scale. That's largely a function of history because those organizations started out with an ultrasound-only approach and then were able to add carcass data to the evaluation later on. And so they chose to, at the time they added carcass data, to continue to print the ultrasound values they printed. So they would use both sets of data but place greater emphasis on the ultrasound data and print the results on the ultrasound scale. And so their EPDs describing beef quality would be in units of intramuscular fat, as many as they're breeding animals and not marbling score units in finished cattle. So Dr. Kendeth was, again, kind of the idea behind this, and his charge to the subcommittee that we created was to standardize, or at least consider standardizing, the way that these values are reported. BIF has had a long history, and really part of the creation of BIF was to create uniform beef improvement programs to facilitate maximum uptake by the industry so that producers, commercial producers, and seed stock producers have as much opportunity and as much similarity across programs so they don't have to learn a lot of different techniques and systems and that sort of thing. When we can have uniformity across programs, that just makes it easier for commercial producers that are using crossbreeding systems to understand and make sure that they get what they're after. And so the idea of standardizing with the goal of having similar programs across the industry certainly would be an opportunity to simplify selection by commercial producers and also to increase the accuracy of selection because if they truly are getting what they think they're getting, then they're more likely to end up with a better result. Another reason that Dr. Kendeth brought this to our attention is that, as you know, and as Larry will present later, that for many years, the U.S. Meat Animal Research Center has calculated across breed adjustment factors to compare expected progeny differences from one breed to another. Those have been growth trait predictions for the most part, but there has been certainly some interest in the industry and some effort at Clay Center on extending that to carcass traits to be able to do across breed comparisons for carcass traits. Of course, if we're going to do that, though, we're fortunate that everybody has their growth traits pretty much in line. But when we have some breeds producing ultrasound numbers and some breeds producing carcass numbers, then not only does it become more difficult to make the adjustments, but certainly more difficult for producers to utilize those adjustment factors on their own farms and ranches. And then as the realm of multi-breed evaluation continues and moves in that direction, as multiple organizations consider uniting for genetic prediction purposes and calculating EPDs together, then obviously they'll have to standardize. And oftentimes they'll look to an organization like BIF for guidance in terms of what should be the standard and what the organization feels the most appropriate for the industry. The committee that I worked with on this was a really a good group to work with, a lot of folks from various backgrounds, all with some advanced training in animal breeding and genetics, but some representing more the research side, such as Larry Kendiff, Keith Bertrand, Dorian Garrett. Dale Van Vleck, of course, was a part of this. Janice Rump would be in that as well. And then also from the breed associations, we had Sally Northcutt, Robert Williams, and Lauren Hyde from their respective breed associations participated. So they were part of the committee that reviewed the recommendations, made suggestions, and helped author what we're presenting today for consideration. To start with, I'll present what the current guidelines state and what has been in, I would assume, a number of past volumes of the BIF guidelines, past editions. Right now on page chapter 5, I think, which is the National Cattle Evaluation chapter, page 51, it states, carcass traits are presumed to be measured on an age-constant basis. Carcass measures could be from slaughter data, live animal data, such as ultrasound, or a combination of both data types. So this is sort of the area that we thought would be appropriate to insert maybe a more in-depth and a more specific recommendation. So I'll present to you now the recommendation that the committee has. And I've presented it first kind of in bigger type, sentence by sentence. Like most of us when we write things, we tend to make it longer and more verbose and some of those sort of things. And we probably could have done a better job with that, but when you write by committee, sometimes it works out that way. But regardless, I've got about 3 slides to break it down in larger print just so the folks in the back can see it well. And then I have a final slide that has it all in one. So if you want to look through it and make comments, suggestions, that sort of thing, we'll do it that way. But what we proposed, what the subcommittee has proposed for replacement for that statement in the BIF guidelines reads as such. Whenever possible, carcass data from harvested fed cattle and ultrasound measurements from yearling breeding bulls and heifers should be jointly analyzed with multiple trait models. Such an evaluation would provide genetic predictions for both carcass and ultrasound measurements. Since the carcass measurements are the economically relevant traits, the carcass state predictions and their associated accuracy values should be published for use in selection, and the both carcass and ultrasound measures should be evaluated on an age-constant basis. So the next steps then for this particular process is that certainly this is one of the opportunities for input. We've circulated this to the breed association members of BIF, and so they've had opportunity to see this before, but we certainly welcome input and discussion of the proposed guidelines revision. Then ultimately it will be presented on up to the BIF board to make their decision, as I understand, Mark. And then finally, of course, the implementation is ultimately an individual breed association decision, but we encourage the staffs and the boards of directors of the breed associations to consider this as possible change if they're doing something other than what the guidelines recommend. With that, Mark, if you'd like to open up for any comments or discussion?
Yes, please.
So what do you think about this proposed change?
I walked in late, so please apologize, and I know Janice is going to be covering this, but the only question I would have if this was, well, more referred to the breed association, is that it was to a constant age.
Yeah, let's address the end point questions after Janice's presentation.
I mean, other than that, it's long overdue, and I think it's a very good thing to have the carcass and ultrasound combined and not split them. I think that's a disservice to the industry, because after all, the economically relevant trade is the carcass.
Right. And just by way of explanation, we debated putting the presentations in another order, but we thought that it would maybe make sense to those without a background in what we're doing to have Dan as an overview person, and Janice will get more in detail on the end. Any other comments or discussion on the non-endpoint related aspects of it? This is a general sense, or people generally supportive